the March 22nd CCSD general meeting. If all you folks can join me and stand up, we'll pledge allegiance. I think we have a quorum. Four of my colleagues are here. Is there a report from closed session, Art?
We met in closed session at the last regularly scheduled board meeting and discussed the items on the agenda, but there were no actions taken in closed session that required reporting at this meeting.
Thank you. Tammy, are there any acknowledgments that you wish to share with the public?
Are you talking about the agenda review?
No, item number 3.
So did we skip over item number 2? I do have some agenda review.
Oh, the agenda review.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. I do have some items under that.
Okay.
I'd like to pull item number... Excuse me, I'm sorry. I'm just coming in. Item under the consent agenda, 6C... the adopt resolution 24-2007. I will bring it back for consideration at the next meeting. And then under regular business, item 8B, did not have enough time to finish the modifications to the CCSD's purchasing policy and travel policy. That too will be brought back. And then finally, in item 7C, just a correction to the agenda. That's resolution, or...
Yeah, I'm hearing noises. Thank you. Joan, you're going to say something?
I'd like to. Well, sorry. May I ask that we look at the, I have some question about the minutes when we do the agenda.
Okay.
We do the consent agenda. Rather.
Okay.
And Mr. President, is my mic on?
Hello?
Microphones are working now. But, yeah, they are.
Are we on? Okay, Greg, go ahead.
Okay. Mr. President, I'd like to pull item 6E for separate consideration.
And Joan, you're...
It's 6B.
6B. Okay. Okay. So is that it for any additions, deletions, or pulled consent items? Okay, let's move on to the acknowledgement that I jumped the gun on a little earlier.
Okay, thank you. Today we have with us Eliane Guillo. She's a transportation planner with the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments, and she's here to give a brief presentation of the North Coast Transit Plan, our Cambria element. I introduce Eliane. Thanks for being here today.
That little sound is still up there. Okay. Okay.
It's a video.
Next power slide.
Okay.
It'll go up, it'll go to the previous one.
Don't touch anything else. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm just going to
We had, as a slow cog, San Luis Obispo Council of Government, the responsibility to combine several transit plans along the entire North Coast, which is similar to what we did 4 years ago in the North County. And the idea is that you don't just look at one thing at a time, but you have to see how they connect, how they work together. Can you, achieve some cost saving if you combine them? So today is a Cambria presentation. A month ago, we went to Los Osos, and a month earlier to Morro Bay. Why do a transit plan? It's a federal requirement in order to access federal funding. And ideally, it would be good to do it every 5 years. We're not always able to do so because of the need for funding for the plan. The consultant was not here today from San Francisco, the IBI group, came to town about a year ago and held a workshop to identify what some of the needs were, you know, what was working, what was not working, and to help us shape the direction of the plan. The plan outcome is a five-year projection of capital and operating expenditure, where the funding is going to come from for each one of them, and what should you look at first, maybe the first 2 years, and then further down the road within the next 5 years. On the North Coast, for Cambria specifically, what we are talking about is a trolley service, which I'm sure most of you are familiar with, a senior van, which might only be visible for those that ride it or that are volunteering to drive it, and it's the most successful senior van in the region at this time, and the RTA route number 12, which you can see off your line, not specifically your stops, anywhere along the line. Just a short snapshot on where we stand as the end of June 2006 is the Cambria trolley carried about 8 riders an hour. Once you subtract the local contribution, which stands for the fares, it's about $7.25 per rider. That's what we're spending in TDA money. The Morro Bay situation, which is more mature, which is more extensive, which is restricted to seasonal service, they get up to 13.5 riders an hour and less than $2 per rider, just to give you an idea. The Cambria Community Bus is a very reasonable cost per rider at $2.50 for a service of this type, which is a specialized service akin to a dollar ride. And of course, when you get into the regional services, for the fixed route itself, you're talking less than $3 per rider because of the volume of ridership on this route, especially to Cuesta College. And then on the runabout service, it's the most expensive we have. Public outreach were done, onboard passenger survey, including the Cambria trolley, stakeholder interviews, planning workshop in each community, including, of course, Cambria, and presentation of the draft plan. This is the last scheduled presentation. Some of the issue more specific to Cambria and Cayucos when you start getting north of Morro Bay is you're getting further away from urban areas, which have a lot of places people need to go to. You don't have a very strong transit market. Most households, by living that far away, have an automobile. And for Cambria, you have the largest share of seniors on the North Coast, higher than Cayucos, higher than Morro Bay, at 27%. This is as of the year 2000, and is probably higher now. The main theme that came out of the workshop is that the community bus or the Cambria senior van may have a long-term challenge of significantly expand the regional service or greatly alter the trolley service. In the near term, let's not look at making too many changes. What we have works for the market that it is serving. However, because there is a short-range transit plan coming up for the RTA coming up this summer, it's time to seriously look at, is it sufficient to have 3 round trips a day region-wide, not just between Cambria and Morro Bay? We're also talking between Paso Robles and San Miguel, for instance. One recommendation for near-term implementation is to redesign the village trolley brochure. There is a lot of information that could be added to the brochure that would make it more informative and a lot more understandable for someone that comes from out of town. The other would be to introduce a token fare that would be used by the hotel, the restaurant, you know, businesses in your downtown areas in order to make it even more tempting for someone to use the service out of where they are staying or where they are coming to and from, as opposed to driving to Main Street and just riding the trolley for, you know, a short stint. In the long term, we now have a rideshare program that, as of last week, was shifted from the RTA agency to the SLOCOG agency. And that is one area that really needs to be addressed, is how can you help out-of-town workers coming to Cambria, especially from North County, get to work in a more reliable, in a safer way, in a more affordable way. And that we see a potential market for van pools and carpools. There is also some grant funding coming out that could be tapped into that would pick up half the cost of the program. Another direction that needs to be looked at, we're not saying this is something that has to be done, but at least look at whether it might make sense down the road to what coming up next is, we would like your comments, your suggestion, anything that we have not addressed. We'll send them to the consultant, and the full plan, including Morro Bay, Los Osos, and Cambria, will come to the board in a couple weeks.
Could I ask a question, please?
Yes, please.
If we go from the community bus to Dial-A-Ride, won't that exclude folks who are not disabled from using the bus?
If they are able to use the van, they will be able to use the Dial-A-Ride. It's the same type of vehicle.
No, I mean, won't they? Right now, if you're of a certain age, you can ask to use the community bus. You don't have to be disabled.
Right.
But the Dial-A-Ride is for disabled only, at least I gathered it was from your presentation.
No, I'm not. Didn't make myself clear.
Okay.
The Runabout is the specialized disabled program that exists region-wide.
Okay.
The general public Dial-A-Ride that would be considered, if it made sense, you know, from a cost standpoint, would be for the general public, in other words, anybody, including seniors and disabled, everybody together.
Okay, fine, that's fine. Thank you.
But there would then be a cost to the Dial-A-Ride where there isn't to the community bus right now, is that right?
The community bus right now is heavily subsidized by the Cambria Community Council.
Yes.
I would say approximately 30%, which is the highest type of contribution there is out there, except maybe Cal Poly contributing to slow transit.
Well, they do their annual campaign, and those of us who send money to the community council, it's because we know they support the community bus. So I think at the moment it seems like the community is interested in supporting, you know.
Yeah, I don't think the support of the community was the reason for making that suggestion. It was more, are we going to be able to keep a pool of volunteers to make this run day after day without, you know, having to come to someone at the last minute?
I understand that. I was just thinking that it would then change that that it would become a fare for the rider each time.
There would be a fare for the rider, yes.
Okay. I think that that would probably be problematic to some.
My name is Elian.
Elian.
And the last name is even more difficult. It's Guillo.
Guillo. What's so difficult about that?
Well, I can tell you I got a lot of different versions.
Okay. Well, thank you, Ms. Guillo, for coming. It was an excellent presentation.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's now up to Deputy Steeb with the Sheriff's Report.
Good afternoon. I have the distinct pleasure of reporting that it's been fairly inactive in Cambria for the last 4 weeks since we last met. We had a commercial burglary at the east end of town and a vandalism to some of the CCSD property. One of the benches out on the Fiscalini Ranch was damaged. Other than that, no crime trends to report. Calls for service are on average, but nothing out of the ordinary. I will report that since everybody here knows Dave Melendi, we did have a benefit barbecue on last Saturday and raised a substantial amount of money for him. As you know, he's in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and was in a motorcycle accident. He's still in a drug-induced coma. They've given him a trach, and he's fighting off a fever and some other stuff right now. We are holding another benefit barbecue here at the Vets Hall on Saturday the 31st from 1 to 5, and everybody's encouraged as we continue with the outpouring from Cambria and throughout the county for support to get him home. That's our primary goal. That is not covered by insurance. He's going to need a med flight to get back here. So he's touched. I can't think of anybody he hasn't touched in this community at some point through the Melendi family or that ambulance family. So I'd be happy to take any questions or comments. Thank you.
Okay, Tammy, it's time for the general manager's report.
Thank you. Since our last meeting with regard to the build-out reduction program, we have held a couple of more build-out reduction program presentations, one to the Cambria Chamber of Commerce on the 20th. That did actually happen a couple of days before last board meeting. And then we prepared and presented our presentation to the management team for the services district. The two that are coming up, we have a really early morning presentation to this newsletter was not one that actually was expected to be for communication purposes, but we had a little bit of space, and I took the opportunity to do that, and that's one of the other reasons why I had some phone calls and some folks come into the office and visit with me. I'm sorry, but I don't have page 2 of my staff report here. I know there is a page 2, so let me just recall my memory. I do know that we have Michael Thompson's here today to report from the Parks, Recreation, and Open Space. I did have a reminder in there to the public with regard to our trash days coming up, and that is the week of April 9th, as I recall. And then we've got today our quarterly report from the Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve. So at this time, I too wanted to acknowledge that I see a couple of other PROS commissioners in the audience, just so that you're aware that they're here. I see Ben Bolden in the back of the room, and I believe Jeff Miller emailed me, and I think I saw him walk in. Are you guys both here? Okay, they're out here too. But I'll bring to the podium now Michael Thompson, and he can make the Parks, Recreation, Open Space Commission report.
Thank you, Tammy. Good afternoon, President Funky Blue and directors. You met Jeff Miller, who is our most recent appointee to the commission. And along with Steve Niffen, Jeff will be working very closely this year with Bob Kelly on the issues related to the community park, and the EIR is going to be going forward, and those two will be very actively involved in generating community support and working on issues relative to the EIR, so that's something we're looking forward to during this coming year. We will also, as a commission, participate in review of the Community Park EIR, which begins next week. And also next week, we have a meeting with Supervisor Gibson related to the historical, or the pocket park in the historical district where the old CCSD building was located. And Supervisor Gibson is interested in helping us move forward with some of the issues, drainage and so forth, related to the park. And so we're looking forward to getting his support on that. We also, at our last meeting, heard a presentation from Julia Rice regarding the Citizens Recreation Committee final report. And we were very impressed with the work that that committee did. And we'll be looking at a number of their recommendations, because I think they have some merit for perhaps some future PROS activity. And then, let's see. Oh, we also reviewed the which meets on Thursday evenings, and so we've decided that we would rotate attendance at that meeting so we could establish a better liaison with them. So we're looking forward to that, and also to other things that, that come up during the course of the year. And I thank you very much.
Thank you.
Before I bring up Joellen, I just wanted to confirm for the public's information that the Mission Country Spring Cleanup is April 9th through 13th. This is an opportunity for everyone to clean out their garages or clean out their homes, and there's no extra charge for residential CCSD customers. And then the last thing I wanted to mention was a recruitment we currently have underway for our an assistant finance manager. Fortunately, one of the very, very good staff members has decided to move on, and so we have had a recruitment out, and we have applications closing on Tuesday, March 27th at 4 o'clock. If anyone's interested, they can go to our website and pull down the application and the position description and the job announcement at www.cambriacsd.org, or they can phone Monique Madrid in our district offices at 805-927-6223. So, Joellen, you're here for the Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve quarterly report.
Thank you, and thank you for the opportunity to speak here today. I handed out sheets to you, and I did put holes in them this time so you can put them in your binders. And I'm going to start off with the cell tower report, because that's something that everybody is interested in, and I just need to tell you that things have changed again, and Singular is no longer the lead agency for taking it through the planning department. It's now Sprint Nextel, and the representative for Sprint Nextel is somebody who's been with this project since the very inception, so he knows the project well, and it looks like it's going to go forward pretty smoothly at this point, with a hearing date at the Planning Commission of May 24th, a tentative hearing date. We'll see what changes before then. We're still doing our work days on the ranch, and most recently we've been working on a trail realignment behind the Warren Road residences, and then further than that, it crosses the Tipton entrance, and it goes to higher ground, and it keeps the trail further away from the residences there. So Ben and Carlos are mostly working right now on the mustard at the south end of the Bluff Trail, and we're working on hiring a crew to come in and help us with that. We've had several donations towards doing that, and we have some logistics to work out on it, but it looks like it's going to go forward. We've installed new Mutt-Mitt dispensers on the ranch at the north and south end of the Marine Terrace trails, because more dogs are using that trail now, since it's an off-leash trail and the Bluff Trail no longer is. And we've recruited volunteers to keep those felled. We're going to start the conservation easement monitoring soon. This month is usually when we start it, and it kind of depends on if we get any more rain or not. And our goal is to have a report to you by June. We're still doing our docent walks once monthly, and they've been really well attended. Our next walk is an exploration of the Santa Rosa Creek Trail, including the creek restoration area that was done by the Land Conservancy of San Luis Obispo, and it'll be led by Brian Stark of the Land Conservancy, and we still have some space for that, but you need to sign up, so you can call the office, 927-2856, and then and there are brochures on the back table, too, for the docent walks, for those of you who would like to pick one up and check out what we're doing. We're also making plans now for the third annual Wildflower Show, which will be April 28th and 29th here at the Vets Building. And we fill this hall with about 400 specimens of wildflowers in vases, in fabulous bouquets, and with the Latin name and the common name of each flower. And this year we're adding whether they're native or invasive. Last year we added whether they were rare and endangered or not to the cards. And then I also wanted to say that we'll be working with CCSD and PROS on reviewing and commenting on the EIR for the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve, and we're really looking forward to that. And does anybody have any questions?
Yes.
Of me? Okay.
Does anyone have any questions first?
You're welcome.
I more appreciate the docent walks. I just wanted to make that a comment, is that, and I'm hoping that you and, the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve group, your group, will expand it, if anything. It seems to me that's among the greatest services that you're providing to the community, mm-hmm. and I'd really like to see that happen a lot. And more people to go on them. Those of us who have gone really have benefited greatly. So thanks a lot for doing them.
Thank you.
Joellen, I'm starting to become concerned with the carriers because of the difficult cell reception we have in Cambria.
Right.
So what does it mean when you state the carriers at this time will start with Sprint, Nextel, Singular, and Verizon, with T-Mobile probably coming on later? What does that mean?
That means the first carriers that go on the tower will be Sprint slash Nextel, because they've combined, Verizon and Singular. And T-Mobile says they're going to be on the tower, but at this point they're not making definite plans as nearly as we can figure out.
Okay, so, that answers part of my question.
Okay. Now,
secondly, when can we expect service to improve given the new cell tower?
They're hoping to start construction as early as the end of July. It might be a little bit later than that, but that's what they're hoping for. I don't know how long construction will take, and that's depending on if they get the drawings to the Planning Commission as soon as the hearing is finished.
Is that something maybe you can find out between now and the next meeting?
Yep.
Okay, great. I appreciate that.
All right.
Secondly, with these invasive plant removal program,
yes.
Who determines whether a plant is invasive or not?
Well, it's kind of like generally accepted that some plants take over and totally blot out the native plants in the area. And a lot of the grasses were brought in here from the European invasion, I guess, of this country. And what they do, there are ones that are non-natives that travel slowly and aren't a nuisance and don't blot out the native plants. And those were out of the native plants like the mustard. But as far as I know, it's not that flammable unless it builds up thatch.
Okay, who makes that determination? I mean, the pampas grass is easy and the broom is easy. Many of us recognize that. But who in your committee makes that determination?
We've made it based on information from, I think it's called the Weed Council in San Luis Obispo County, and it's part of that council are representatives from the Resource Conservation District in Templeton, and those plants are considered invasives by them.
Does the committee ever confer with the chief and or the Cambria Forest Committee and or the Forest Management Plan?
We've started.
Excuse me?
We've started.
Okay.
But we haven't in the past.
I think it's it'd be wise to get input from the chief, who also happens to be one of the leaders of the Cambria Forest Committee, who's very knowledgeable in this area. The Forest Committee itself, which would provide a wonderful resource, free of charge. And since we pay the chief, I think he'll be free of charge as well.
Good.
And the Forest Management Plan, I think you should exploit that as well, since we've already paid for that, and that's a wonderful resource as well. That would make me feel more comfortable if I know that you're doing it consistent with those three guiding lights, so to speak.
I started attending the Forest Committee meeting with the emergency meeting last week, and we do have a board member on that committee, and I will continue to attend those meetings, and we will confer with the chief.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, ma'am, the one who raised your hand,
yes.
Do me a favor, please. Can you do me a favor,
sure.
Mrs. Calchan?
Right.
Louise, can you fill out one of these?
I did.
Okay, but you put down another agenda item. Now, it's tough for me to jump all over the place and recognize people, but if you want to speak to this one, I'll let you do it right now. But for in the future, can you just go ahead and fill out for each agenda item?
I will.
So go ahead if you want to say something on this specific item.
I thank the community for letting me speak. We were just talking about this pampas grass. Well, we have some in our backyard. What do we do with it? And on the
instead of the chief, can you address the board? I'd appreciate that.
I just don't understand why we're cutting down trees or uprooting them. I mean, they were here before us.
Some were.
Well, yeah. So we're going to go around the whole county uprooting all the eucalyptus trees? This doesn't make sense to me. Does it to all of you? Does it?
It depends on whether they're natives or not and how invasive they are.
So this tree that you...
Okay, Louise, listen. Public comment is designed to address the board. This question and answer stuff is how I make a living at the courthouse, okay? Thank you. Let's move on to the district engineer, Mr. Gressens. How are you?
Fine. Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. I'll be brief, and feel free to stop me if you have any questions on these. Just to summarize the water projects that we've been working on since your last meeting, the Water Master Plan EIR and build-out reduction planning is still going forward. I'm reviewing draft sections of the EIR, and the latest draft section I received from RBF was the build-out reduction plan, so that's the one we're focusing on right now. Moving on to the Pine Knolls tank replacement, I think you'll see some nice pictures in Brian's report, so I don't want to talk too much about that project other than to say that it looks as though the final coat of paint is going on this week. They had a little bit of the color on yesterday. It looked very nice. And that's on the first tank. And after that's painted, they'll be connecting some piping to it. There'll be some testing on the tank after it's filled. So I'm estimating approximately mid-April or thereabouts before that first tank goes online. Once that tank goes online, we take out the two existing tanks, which makes room for the final second tank of the project, which should be completed towards the end of the summer, early fall, in that time frame. Moving on to the desal project, I'm still regrouping with our infrastructure committee and our legal counsel to go through what is going to be our next plan of attack following the delay of our coastal development permit for the geotechnical investigation. And, of course, that was postponed as far as the vote goes by the Coastal Commission during their February 14th meeting of this year. The next project board meeting, so you'll be hearing more on that project soon. Lastly, I did a catch-all on other capital projects and planning efforts that we've been involved with, and we've been providing some input to Black and Veatch on their rate study lately, and we plan to continue to refine that information that's being sent to them. In addition, we've been reviewing bits and pieces of the community park EIR and looking ahead to some of the projects for the next fiscal year that we think are going to be likely priority projects. So it would be retrofitting the existing Lamert and Fiscalini tanks for seismic reinforcement. And then there's a few bottlenecks remaining in the system that we'd like to focus on as far as getting improved fire flows in the system. And that pretty much concludes my report. I'd be glad to elaborate if you have any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Brian, time for the utilities management report.
Okay. Carlos gets that up. I got a couple typos. One's on page 4, a little correction. And third line from the bottom, let's say 8990 report. It should say 10.64 inches. That's the lowest recorded rain amount we had for a season. The one that's in there is actually the second lowest. And on page 5, in the header of both of those charts, the date should be 0319. That's on March 19th of 07. And that will make everything good. This is a Biaccini house. I'm just showing spring is on us, and we can get ready for a good spring. Next slide. Santa Rosa Creek today at the lagoon, and you can see that the creek's not going to the ocean, and pretty typical for this time of year. And San Simeon is still going to the ocean, and as of today, and you see it's going out right here. And take a look at the chart of San Simeon and the black line, and that's where we are. As of the 15th, is the black line right here, and we're pretty much normal. And, look over to San Simeon again. And this is a cumulative of, and that being said, even if we have average rainfall throughout the season, we're still going to be at the lowest level that we've been recording since we've been recording it at the station, at the wastewater plant, since the early 70s. And but with that being said, though, water tables are both full at this time of year, and we probably will get a pretty good rain in April. And but we just don't know. I think it's good to be prudent and cautious now. I mean, we could have a scenario where we don't get rain again till March of next year. That's happened before. So just to be prudent and remind everybody that, you know, we are in a water code 350, and this water that we have in Santa Rosa and San Simeon is it. And when it goes down towards sea level, that's all we have. It's done. And when we watch the rains come like this, they just came at the right time in the right amounts, charged the creeks, charged our basins. It's about the minimum amount of rain that we could have in the right order for that to happen. And right now we're looking good, but you know, we're not out of the woods. We still have a problem with water. I just wanted to point that out. These are on the board right now. This is the number one tank at Pine Knolls, and this is right after they got done sandblasting the tank on the outside. The tank came in pre-rolled panels, and they were pre-primed and painted on the outside and the inside. But where they welded it together, they had to re-sandblast and re-prime, and you can see the panels there where they've welded them together and then primed them to give them the first coat so they wouldn't flash off and rust. And first actual primer coat went on as white, and I didn't get a chance to get the second coat, but it went on at a different color. And finally, this is the final color that went on, and today that painting will be complete, and the painters will be out of there on this first tank today, provided there isn't anything wrong. And I'll just point out that all that paint was put on with a roller and not a spray gun, so there's no overspray in the air, no aerosols. and the texture on it looks nice. I mean, it has a little nap to it, and it kind of dulled the reflection back on the paint, and it's a good-looking paint job. It looks really nice, and painters should be commended. They did a nice job on this tank. Yeah. Okay, one other item. We had go back to this one here. Just go back to the rainfall. Dang. Just the rain went out. Some of those averages, we've had floods, so there is a good side to it. This is Andy Dreyfus. We had a sewer plug out here on this facility here at the Vets Hall on one Saturday, and it was plugged solid on the line in the parking lot, and we had to excavate the parking lot to unplug it, some old cast iron lines, and take the lines out and actually unplug it, and he had to get himself dirty, and he was trying to avoid pictures, so I put him in here anyway, and this just came out really good. The parking lot is not paved. We didn't pave it. We wanted people to drive over it for a couple of weeks and compress it really good, but it's got some base on it. In a few more weeks, we'll actually pave the parking lot, and it'll look as good as new. And I'll go back to the text. I'll just point out, in staff, we had Dylan Blackburn. He just passed his Class B driver's license, and that's one of the milestones for becoming an operator and keeping your job with the wastewater plant. So he passed that, and he was happy to do that. He'll be taking his wastewater one in the next couple of weeks, and he's pretty excited about that, and everybody's trying to help him out, and we're wishing him the best. On the SCADA system, all the equipment's at CyberNet. They're doing all the programming on it. And the next shot is to go out and go out to bid for the contractor to install it. And that's the next phase of that operation. On the biosolids, we're working with Dean Russo to design the slab. And he's working on the calculations for the weight and structure and seismic on that unit. And as soon as we get that done, we'll be working on the slab. We've had the field meetings and everything's done with that. We actually went with him because he can do it right now. There's a couple other firms out there, but they're so busy that they'd be booking us way out a couple months ahead, and we didn't want to go that route. Besides, the bid was really reasonable. In document imaging, we got the LaserFish installed and also the agenda manager installed on the computer, and we've had training on the LaserFish. And it's up and running, so we can store data now. And in the future, retrieving documents is going to be a lot easier for the district and a lot easier on staff. And it's going to be nice, and I think staff will really like it. And with that, I'll tender any questions.
Mr. President, I think that Director Chaldicott had a question of Brian Bode.
I just wanted to... I think I'll leave my question until next month. See how the water supply is.
Okay.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Bob.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. You have my report in front of you. What's not really captured well in this report, especially when it comes to inspections, is that we have five fairly labor-intensive, fairly intense projects that we're working on that are new commercial buildings or commercial remodels. One of them includes the old Camozzi's Bar and Grill, which has been purchased, and it's basically in the process of being interior remodeled. That was one of our target hazards where we had some unsolved arson fires before, so we're very glad to see that building's moving forward. It's secured well now, and the new owners have plans to basically completely go through the building and bring it up to code so that it meets electrical, fire, life safety codes, and other things. So that'll be a big benefit for us, but on the other side, it's very intensive to have our staff out there reviewing that progress on that and three other large projects. So that's not really covered here in the prevention and education, simply because some of those require two or three trips a week to do specific spot inspections. Later on the agenda today, there are two agenda items. One is on the proposed defensible space ordinance, and the other one's on the annual fire hazard fuel reduction. One was placed on in the event in the likely event that the defensible space ordinance doesn't move forward, so we have some way to move forward with providing adequate defensible wildland space in our urban forest. I wanted to piggyback on, you'll see the second a bullet on my report that talks about the recent Orange County, California fire, which was intentionally set by someone who stole a vehicle and then to destroy the evidence, torched the car. The resulting fire front did some damage to structures in the way, but the two structures that were severely damaged in the fire were actually damaged by embers produced from the main column of fire. And this is typically, now that we understand more about fire behavior, how homes and how other property that's not in the way of the actual head of the fire get damaged. It's the embers that burn that are projected up into the air with that thermal column. It's like a hot air balloon. They ride for a period of time, come down, still glowing, and they start a new fire. So in San Luis Obispo County in the last 2 months, this county has seen an unusual high rate of wildland fire control, wildland season where the fuel's out there dry early. Last month, I believe Chief Miller told you that we had five people who had applied and we're going to be starting the academy. Those five people have passed our academy now and are on board. Four of them are EMTs and one of them is a paramedic. So we're glad to have those new reserves on board. We are still moving forward with a grant that was given to 11 fire agencies in the county to allow us to upgrade our new wildland equipment. The $37,000 worth of equipment that we're going to get is going to be extremely beneficial to our organization. It's going to cost us about a $5,000 or $6,000 local match, which you've already granted in our prior year's budget. But the biggest advantage to us is most of you have seen Fire on the Mountain, or you've seen the movie that talks about the tragedy on Storm King Mountain. One of the firefighters that was killed on Storm King Mountain, his brother, was a researcher with NASA Ames Research Center, and he actually quit his job and started a company called Storm King Technologies to improve safety devices for firefighters so that after the loss of his brother, that no other firefighters would die because some of our technology to protect ourselves in the wildland firefighting environment are very old. So one of the things he came out with, it's fifth or sixth generation now, is a new shelter that's not only designed for tall guys like myself or some of the board members and the members in this room here, but they're also a lot more durable. They don't tear as easy. Basically, we were climbing into aluminum foil before with a little bit of batting on the back. And if you wiggled too hard or a tree fell and a branch hit it, it would tear it open and you would be exposed to the fire. So this grant allows us to buy almost $400 fire shelters that would be very difficult for us to buy at, to the tune of 30 of them. So it would be real expensive. So truly, this is a godsend for us, and we're real happy to get that, and we will have that equipment by this fire season. Last thing is I was hoping to have our new engine here today, but unfortunately a lot of other folks in the state have bought new fire equipment. So our engine's in Modesto. The warranty work was completed yesterday, and we have some equipment that's going to be mounted on it. And I would imagine we're actually traveling to Modesto on Wednesday of next week. And I would imagine that'll take 10 working days for them to get that on, and it will be here. So we'll have it here at the next board meeting for you to look at. We're real happy with it. It's a great piece of equipment, and we look forward to retiring one of our good-looking but tired fire engines that's right now has a leaky water tank. So we'll be glad to put that out to pasture and sell that. Last month, Chief Miller was with us, and we don't get any reimbursement from the tour or the cyclists or the promoters that put that tour through. And the primary reason we staff up is because Highway 1 is blocked, and it could mean the difference between 15, 20-second delay to 3 or 4 minutes getting across the highway till the Highway Patrol stops the race, stops the cyclists, and then they wave us through. So we don't want a resident to have to be to face that type of situation. So we were glad that none of that occurred last year. We didn't have any emergencies during the race. And this Saturday, March 24th, we will be at the Old Rod and Reel Mobile Home Park. The owner there has let us use the main house that was in the front, the quarters that that the park manager used to live in, as a training facility. You'll see what we call artificial or Hollywood smoke coming out of there, and that day we'll be focused on what we call RIC training, which is Rapid Intervention Crew. That's where we train firefighters to rescue down or trapped firefighters, and that helps us be better prepared and better able to rescue residents or occupants inside that are trapped in a building and get them out as effectively and quickly as possible. So that's basically the main portions of my report, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Who, when the Amgen people come through this way, do they have to get permission from the county to come through San Luis Obispo County?
They do have to get permission from San Luis Obispo County. Since it's a multi-county, I believe they go through, and I may be wrong on this, I believe they go through over 14 or 15 counties in the state of California. They have to get a state permit because they're using State Highway 1 and mostly state highways. But over the last 2 years, I have asked the county if there's a way to tag on our need, because our community is bisected by Highway 1. Unlike other communities that have over or underpasses, we don't. So we're literally cut in half by if Highway 1's blocked for a period of time. And there is no ability in the permit they get from the state of California to put our local cost recovery on board. There's no way to recover it. There's no way to proceed with it.
Well, when they apply for a permit, don't we have an opportunity to provide some input?
No. Every year we've told them that it will affect fire protection and emergency service delivery in our community. And they go, okay, and then they sign the permit. Because I don't believe even at the county level they have a way, since this is a state, if you will, it's a project blessed by the governor's office and by the state to run this tour through. There's no way for them to put cost recovery on the top.
Okay. Any other questions?
Yes.
I'm still in the process of doing that, but you'll definitely have it by next week. On the budget, there were no material or major unexpected revenues or expenditures. The one cash disbursement I wanted to mention was approximately $1.5 million, which was paid to the California Department of Health Services to repay them for the funds advanced to the district for SR4. And then on the reserves, the balance on the LAIF account as of February 28, 2007 was approximately $6.8 million, which is a net decrease of $1.5 million from January 31st, 2007. That the $1.5 million was to pay the California Department of Health Services. And I wanted to mention that the effective yield for February is 5.18%, which is pretty competitive, especially since it's 100% liquid. If I call before 10 o'clock, the money's in the bank that day. So, you know, that's basically a CD rate for entirely liquid money, which is pretty good. I neglected to put one other item on here. We do have a new member of the finance team. Her name's Suzanne. I don't want to butcher her last name, so I'll leave it at Suzanne. She works the front desk. She's only been with us a couple of weeks, but she's doing a wonderful job. I think she'll be a great addition to our team.
Any comments from the board? Jerry McKinnon wants to speak on this matter. Thank you for filling out a card, Mr. McKinnon.
You're welcome. Jerry McKinnon, is this on? Can you hear me? Okay, all right. I'm looking over the financial report, and as one voice, I'm disappointed to see that the items do not reflect Veterans Memorial Building expenses. In the past, there used to be a VM indicating where money was spent on this particular building. If we're going to have a study later on to find out just exactly what it does cost to run the building, it would help us if we had a backup so that we could check our figures against somebody else's figures. So if that could be considered, I certainly would appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry.
I attended a Tri-County Fish Team meeting on March the 5th, and I'm still a little bit behind because I didn't time it properly, and I missed out on some of the original stuff. And but the key thing is that the TCFT has budget problems, and so the MOU signatories, which we've been a participant to contributing funding for it, will need to, by county now, this is other agencies would be contributing, but we'll need to provide finances on an interim basis. The county of Ventura has picked up the organizational activities, and they're at this point in time being the focal point to try to keep the organization going. So I'll be working with the staff because it's going to require some decisions about funding if we want to continue to participate. And so I'll be working with the staff, and we'll see what we'll come out with.
Thank you. Okay, it's now time for the consent, so maybe we ought to start with pulled item B, and I think that was Joan's request to pull that one. Is that right?
I guess I'm just setting myself up as the minute nag for our board. On the agenda item 7, I looked at this because somebody in the community had asked me about this particular topic. It's the hearing where we were talking about the defensible space ordinance, and the motion that we passed was that the Greg made and called Kathy and checked myself as to what did we intend there and how did that work out. So my suggestion is that we, and hopefully Kathy will help us, that when we make a motion and then we change our minds, we have to formally say that we've changed the motion. So again, as I say, I'm serving in the form as a board nag here, so I hope that you'll accept my suggestion that we be more careful about that. And then, of course, I do think we need to correct these minutes by saying that then the board did change their mind and said that the staff could do it and there would not be a committee appointed. So that's my...
I think that's my recollection as well.
Agreed.
So can we just unanimously agree to edit the minutes to conform to our recollections?
I'd be happy to amend the minutes and bring them back to the next meeting and have them approved.
Wonderful. Okay, let's move on to 6C. And Greg, was that yours?
No, mine's 6E.
No, 6C was mine that were pulled, and it will be brought back for later consideration. That was staff.
Okay, so let's move on to E, and that's yours, Greg.
Thank you, Mr. President, and board members for indulging me. I asked that this be pulled off for separate consideration, not because I have any issues with it, but only to recognize the American Legion for moving forward with a proposal to place a memorial to the Merchant Marine of World War II in the parking lot very near the existing flagpole. A little lesson in history, if you'll indulge me. The Merchant Marine in World War II, as a percentage of total force, lost more men than any of the other branches of the armed services. And I think it's very appropriate that finally the Merchant Marine are getting their just recognition. My father was a member of the Merchant Marine. I think we have as many as four residents in Cambria who are members or who were members of the Merchant Marine, including Richard Tanner, Kathy Tanner's husband. And finally, about a decade ago, Congress bestowed upon them the veterans' benefits that they should have had all along. And so find
something about the past of the Merchant Marine.
You've got
I'm very fortunate. I was a graduate of the Merchant Marine Academy in World War II and served as an engineering officer aboard the Merchant Marine and was lucky to be the survivor of one ship that was sunk where 80 of my shipmates were deceased, mostly by the burning gas, because we were on an aviation tanker. Korean War came along, and I was called to the Navy, and I served in the Navy, Naval Reserve, for 27 and a half years as a Naval Reserve officer, retired as a commander, and I'd always been an engineering officer. After that, I joined our American Legion here in Cambria, and that's why I'm here. I want to thank you for speaking of the monument, because you've already considered making a donation in name for your father. And I have ordered the monument, and with your permission, I've given you a permit of where I'd like to place it. It'd be approximately 7 feet to the left of where the flagpoles are outside. And we'd like to dedicate that monument this coming Memorial Day, and with your permission, we'd like to proceed. So I thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fedora. Jerry McKinnon also wants to address the board on this issue.
I told you we should have had this.
Yep, Jerry McKinnon again. A special memorial for the Merchant Marine is very fitting because they were a special kind of men. The ages from age 16 to 73, some of them had wooden legs. Their dedication was such to getting the supplies to the troops is very important to our success in the war. If you are interested, there is a book entitled Torpedo Junction, which lays out the history of the torpedoed vessels off the Atlantic coast from January of 1942 through August of 1942. And in that period of time, there were 285 merchant ships sunk. 285. Now, when you get to the bottom line, there were over 1,500 merchant marine ships sunk during World War II. And during that period of time, 8,780 men were killed. And at that particular time, the plans for constructing the flagpole were underway, and we could not include it because we were already constructing the flagpole. So now, with the encouragement of special money put toward this, that gives the American Legion an opportunity to do what should have been done 1989. We appreciate this opportunity, and the land that is on the Veterans Memorial Building will be well recognized for the service of these men. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry. Tammy, as I see it, the consent agenda that's ready to be passed is 6A, D, E, F, and G. Is that right?
Well, just as a matter of protocol, I think you have a motion on the table by Director Sanders because he wanted this item separately considered. I may be mistaken, but I think you did.
For item 6E, I move the recommended action.
Right.
Second.
All those in favor, please state aye.
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 Okay, the motion passes unanimously.
And so I'm sorry to interrupt you. 6A... D, F, and G would be the ones you would be considering. Do you want me to read those?
It's not necessary.
Okay.
All those in favor, please state aye.
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 Do we need to second that? Did I second that?
I'm not sure there was a motion on the floor.
There was no motion.
Okay,
on
I'll entertain a motion to pass that portion of the consent agenda 6A, D, F, and G.
So moved. Second.
All those in favor, please state aye.
Aye. Aye.
None opposed. The motion carries.
And how about B then?
B is was pulled.
She'll add it and bring it back next month.
Okay, let's move on to 7A.
Okay, 7A is to adopt Resolution 19-2007, scheduling a public hearing to approve the water and wastewater standby and availability charges for the fiscal year 2007 and 2008. This is just the first part of our annual process by which we schedule a public hearing, and the staff is recommending that we set these hearings for April 26th and May 24th here at the Vets Hall, and we give the fiscal impact, the estimated revenues that would impact water standby availability charges at $175,000, and wastewater standby availability charges at $114,000, and we will be back next month with the first public hearing. So this is just defensible space ordinance based on the immediate need to protect public peace, health, and safety. This is the item that we considered or we discussed last month initially, and you asked us to bring this back. I'm going to turn it over for Chief Putney to make some introductory remarks, and then our district council is here too as well for any processes that might need to be discussed with regard to the urgency nature of the agenda item. Bob.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. First of all, I'd like to apologize. I was not here last month. As I explained, I was back in Wisconsin. And when this item came up, Assistant Chief Miller, who was going to speak to it, unfortunately was out organizing and managing our emergency response preparation activities during that cycle tour, so there was no one here from staff to discuss this last month. So first of all, I wanted to apologize to you because of that. The synthesis of what we have presented before you here is a couple of different ways of proceeding. Since before I became fire chief here, this community services district, like a shrinking number of other organizations in the state of California, has gone to the California Health and Safety Code, which is a code that basically talks about access and ingress to buildings. It talks about a lot of public safety as far as it goes to fire protection. And it has a lot of other chapters in there, too, about worker safety and health. And then there's also OSHA regulations. But specifically, there's a process in there by which an agency can use to identify and declare that vegetation that grows in a community needs to be managed in order to reduce the fire hazard. So for the last long number of years, long before I was your chief, almost 30 years, this community has enacted the Health and Safety Code in order to cause vacant lots to be cleared. A number of competing factors, including the... it's like a stairs. You can't skip a step going up. You have to touch every step going on up. This process to declare the vegetation a nuisance, which to most people is obvious. It's not that vegetation is a nuisance, but when it dries out, it's a threat to the community's public safety. This would be better served by a district ordinance, and that's what most agencies much larger and much smaller than we have done in California. And because of increasing concerns about tons per acre of airborne pollutants and people getting sick, people with respiratory problems, burning's been curtailed. So more and more agencies are looking at mechanically reducing accumulated fuel. There are a lot of codes in California that state that we have to at least comply with minimum state standards. The California Constitution says that all agencies who are responsible for or provide fire protection in the state of California have to meet certain levels to basically ensure that they provide adequate public safety. The Public Resources Code is one of them, the Health and Safety Code. There are a lot of statutes in there. Recently, most of the state of California in 2003 was really kind of hit over the head with Governor Schwarzenegger's Blue Ribbon Fire Commission that was basically chartered after the 2003 Southern California wildland fire siege where millions of dollars of property loss incurred. A lot of civilians lost their lives. Firefighters were burned. And there was a lot of environmental destruction that still today is trying to be remediated because of the resulting rains and the mudslides that occurred. Some of the after decisions of that report, which took almost 2 years to come out and took in everybody from regulators at the federal level all the way down to developers, foresters, environmentalists, looked at that in California, a state that has a lot of regulations, we have a lot of competing regulations. And those competing regulations led to the conditions that occurred in Lake Arrowhead and some of the places down there in Southern California where vegetation management projects were bottled up and could not be completed. So what happened is they had a catastrophic fire. The other thing that I looked at is I wanted people outside who are either very familiar with our fuel bed or not familiar with our fuel bed, our coastal urban forest here in Cambria, to come take a look. And so for the last 5 years, we've been the recipient of Cal Poly students to come on out and look at the fire code requirements that you have approved and that the taxpayers here have supported, and the efforts that we're moving forward and see what kind of progress that we're making. Also, I've been in working with Cal Fire and the Society of American Foresters, members of them, to come on in and look at and see basically what we could do better. The bottom goal of this basic ordinance is to stop the annual declaration that enables us to clear lots. The goal of this ordinance, that's the purpose for it. Also, currently right now, between my staff, district staff, and primarily the district clerk, we spend a lot of time doing all the preparation requirements that are necessary in order to meet the health and safety code declaration of clearing the lots annually. There's a lot of hoops we have to go through as staff, and you're always asking of us to do more. We could do more if we didn't have these steps to go through, if we had an ordinance that was fairly clear and straightforward in order to improve the defensible space in the community. Anytime an ordinance like this goes through, there's obviously controversy. There are those people who want it and want more, and there's those people who want less. Basically, what I'm here to tell you is that the contents of this ordinance, based on the input that I got from you last month, since I wasn't here, but listening to the board meeting and the direction I was given by the general manager, my suggestion is that you receive public comment today and that you allow us to get together further input. But my belief is that this ordinance is currently states all the requirements that the state of California puts on every jurisdiction in the state now. The difference is that it looks at it from the view that we don't live in a desert area. We don't live in a high mountain area. We don't live in a grassland area. We don't live in an area that has chaparral in Southern California or near the Mexican border. We live in a coastal environment that has a unique pine forest. And so that's what these codes are for. And I believe that gaining further public comment and then bringing these back to you later on in this year, I believe this is the proper way to go, both as your fire chief and also someone who's concerned about being able to protect the community. So that's basically what this was about. That's what Chief Miller would have told you if he would have been here the last month. The fiscal impact is in there, the discussion, and the sections of law that require us to do the clearing and require defensible space around there are in basically the findings on the proposed ordinance. So I'd be glad to answer any questions or clear up anything, and I know Art wants to also speak to this as well.
We let Art speak, and then we can ask everybody questions.
I would like to add that Chief Putney correctly states what the current law is regarding this district's authority to go through this process every year, and his attempt was not only to save time but money in the process, period of time to provide that dialogue. That dialogue hopefully will end up with an ordinance that better fits what Cambria wants to achieve in this process, and then gives us an opportunity to have it fit with the forest management plan and the build-out reduction plans and other policies that we are carrying forward for the board. And absent that, I stand ready to answer any questions you may have.
I think that, Joan, ladies first. Greg, you don't mind, do you?
Please.
Good. And if I understand correctly, Art, then this will be the first reading for this because we changed our... Because it has to come back one more time.
At the last board meeting, mm-hmm. the direction was to bring this ordinance back in an urgency format, and that's what was done because was the board's direction. But since that time, we met with representatives who had concerns about this ordinance. So the recommendation today is to not act on it and allow the process of meeting to go forward. Now, that doesn't mean that the district won't address fire safety concerns as it has done in the past, and that's another agenda item, I believe, on today's mm-hmm. agenda to start that process.
Okay.
So we're just going to let the consensus gathering process go forward to bring back another ordinance later.
Okay. Well, because some people in the community talked to me, and one quite passionately, I came up with these three questions I'd like to just ask. And the first is that then this, what we're looking at today, represents the changes that came about from the direction of the board that the staff go back and consult with.
I believe this ordinance represents some changes, but certainly not all the changes that will eventually come back to you at a later date after we meet.
So it's been changed so far, but I didn't realize we were going to have one more time at it. Anyway, so the second question might be for Chief. Given the laws and codes that are cited here, would you say that if this remained with the county, that they would take a similar actions that we're taking now in terms of doing all the lots as opposed to what was done previously?
One of the reasons that I don't bring this up is because this is a very complicated subject, and I will try to make it as uncomplicated as possible, but unfortunately it's extremely complicated.
Okay.
So trying to make this as simply as possible, if we ejected ourselves out of this and allowed the California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection, or CAL FIRE, to come in and do this, they would take the minimum state regulations, which basically were designed for California, northern, southern border, coastal border, and the borders of the states east of us. And it's a generic code requirement that says you must clear vegetation. It simply states they would apply that here. They would not necessarily apply it as some of the nuances we know about our forest, because the state's job is to make sure there's fire marching orders, including forest, timber harvesting, land practices, things like that. They also approve a map of the state of California, which shows areas that are, and I'll use the acronyms and explain what they are, LRA, SRA, and FRA. LRA is local responsibility area. I'll use San Luis Obispo City. San Luis Obispo City is in a flat basin. On the edge of the city there are hillsides that begin to go up off the plain of the flat. And so the state of California, the Board of Foresters, has determined that that's local responsibility area. It's a responsibility of the jurisdiction that's there to provide fire protection and endorse the codes. At the edge of the city where the terrain starts to get steep, it begins to get into map what we call SRA, which is state responsibility area. There, the city of San Luis Obispo has responsibility as a fire agency, but also the California Department of Forestry does, because that's stipulated by California code to CDF CAL FIRE, because they are the state fire agency. FRA would be like north of us. Anytime when you get into a federal forest, that becomes federal responsibility area, because they are responsible for that. Okay. Bring that into Cambria. All of Cambria is state responsibility area. So there are two fire departments that have jurisdiction over every parcel and residence in this town. The California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection, which is also the San Luis Obispo County Fire Department, by contract with the County Board of Supervisors and CAL FIRE, and our department, which I represent as your chief, we also have responsibility here. Mm-hmm. We can be more stringent than CDF CAL FIRE, but we cannot be less restrictive.
Okay.
And the ordinance, the amendment to the state constitution, and specifically to Public Resources Code 4291, after the Southern California fire siege, was they increased defensible space requirements around any dwelling, whether it's a pump house or a dog house, from 30 feet to 100 feet. Governor Schwarzenegger signed it into law in October of 2005. So last year, we increased the number of lots under our fire hazard fuel reduction program to be cleared. And this defensible space ordinance takes in that state mandate. So I hope, you know, the bottom line is that even though we clear lots here, CAL FIRE can still and require additional clearance, except they have looked at this proposed defensible space ordinance and agreed that it meets the intent of the State Public Resources Code and that it meets the intent, talking about Chaparral and Topanga Canyon. It has been modified based on about 6 months of input from people who have who have studied this, from foresters to other fire agencies to other people who have ordinances. What we've tried to do is change it so that it specifically addressed the Cambria urban forest, not the the evergreen bed or whatever up in Marin County or the desert area outside of Needles.
Thank you. I think I'll be able to speak more accurately and intelligently with the community now. Thanks.
Greg, did you have a comment?
Yes, Mr. President, I have a question of the chief. Chief, you're proposing that this item be continued pending public input, and you've got a backup plan here, which is the next item, which essentially is a continuation of the system that we've been under for low these many years. Can you assure us that continuing this item and going back to the system that we've used in the past will not put the community in any greater danger in terms of fire risk? In other words, are we sacrificing fire safety by continuing this item and reverting back to the old system?
The honest answer is no. I can't guarantee you that continuing with the current system doesn't sacrifice public safety. The current system that we have.
Wait a second, is the reverse true? Are you saying if we enact this ordinance as it is right now, then you are guaranteeing public safety? Because I don't think that's true either, is it?
No. What I'm saying is that if we continue on with the program that we've done from years past, we're still not getting to all the parcels, basically, in Cambria. We're still not getting to all of them. And so this defensible space ordinance clearly addresses all the parcels in Cambria, but I believe it needs more work. So I believe that if we move on with it later on this year and we continue to move forward as we have in years past in adding more parcels under the annual declaration, that we will continue to move forward to make sure that we have public safety.
In other words, there's a greater margin of fire safety if this ordinance...
Where we enact this, there are some parcels that currently we are not addressing because they're either in larger ownership, they're under state ownership, like the area along Highway 1, where we don't have authority to require them to clear, basically because they're a state agency. They can go to state Cal Fire and basically find a way either to get out of or to delay clearing the Highway 1 corridor, for example, so we have defensible space along the highway. We're not able to do that under the annual declaration under the Fire Hazard Fuel Reduction Program.
Okay.
Could I?
Sure.
Leading on to that question, if we passed this ordinance, would we then be able to require the state to clear along the highway?
We can, and I believe Art will be able to address this more. Whenever local government goes after a state agency and asks them to clear a property because they have more legal staff than we do and are more entrenched, often it takes longer, and you have to go about it in a sometimes less than amicable way. You may have to go after it with actually code compliance and that they fail to meet the deadline. But I really believe that there is a I believe that even though that we may be delaying implementing the defensible space ordinance in order to get some more public input so that truly it is something that all Cambrians can put their arms around and be assured that it's not going to devastate our community by enacting it and that it's the right thing to do for us. I think that benefit to the community and to us is much better than implementing it right now and have a lot of public outcry that may not completely understand why we're moving forward with this. So I believe that we can enact a level of community public safety still by doing the annual program and continuing to add lots. That's what we've done every year, is continuing increasing the lots that have to be added to.
Are you saying that Cambria can tell Sacramento how to enforce its state law? Is that what you just said?
No, what I'm saying is that we can require Caltrans to fuel modify their area next to the highway.
And they'll say, yes, Mr. Fire Chief Cambry, we'll do whatever you tell us?
No, that's
not realistic.
No, that's what I'm saying is they won't do that. They
of
will probably
not.
Tie us up in litigation to get it done, but eventually we will be able to get it done.
They won't tie us. They'll just say no, thank you. Why tie us up?
Well, and then if they fail to meet our code requirement, then our partner in this, who's also a regulatory agency, is CAL FIRE.
But Peter's question was if we pass this, I thought I understood Peter's question to be if we pass this ordinance, do we then have legal authority to compel compliance without an ordinance on state property? I believe the answer is an unequivocal no. I don't care how many laws we pass.
And let me,
is that right? Am I?
Well, I respect the chief's legal opinion, but I'd like to at least insert mine. I don't believe the ordinance gives us any more authority. I think the real issue with the state is whether we, in enforcing the state law, act as a state agency, and then the cause of action would basically be a writ. I've gone through it with different organizations, and normally if they take our threat seriously, they'll reprioritize their resources to fix our area first, but it is always a fight, like you said, and I don't know who would win at the end of the day if we did go to court.
I can tell you, I'm in no mood now or any time in the future to get into a fight with Sacramento. We're not in a position to prevail.
Yeah, Mr. President, I mean, we're talking about a sideshow here, really. We're talking about some right-of-way that's owned by Caltrans, and that's about it. I think the real issue is what does the defensible space ordinance do that the current program does not do? And I think the chief explained that. There are certain clearances that are required from structures that come into play. It enables the district to essentially clear more space than the space that we clear under the existing program. And I think that's the margin of difference.
As long as it's legal. And part of the community concern was that it was not legal, which district council agreed.
Well, understood. But that's, again, that's a completely separate issue. The issue here, I think, is, at least for me, can the chief tell us that we're not sacrificing any fire safety by not adopting this ordinance? That is, does the tabling of this ordinance have the effect of taking us below the margin of safety that we currently enjoy? And the answer that I heard is no, it doesn't.
Okay. I think out of curiosity, though, I would like to ask, what are the pieces that you think still might be changed? In what areas? And could they be just so they would be aware of what we already know needs to be changed? That was I was asking.
Sure.
I can't recommend that we do it piecemeal because of all the issues involved with this, and it does, based on our experience meeting with the people that are concerned about this, require some meetings and consensus gathering. Also, just as another suggestion, if it's the board's, it seems fairly unanimous that the board will follow staff's direction. I think if that's conveyed to the speakers, that may change what they want to say, but you know, that's up to you to decide.
So, do you want the chief to continue with that?
Well, I just wondered if you could enlighten us in any way what you think still needs to be fixed. But maybe you can't. I don't know. Maybe you can.
In 25 words or less.
I don't know if I can. I don't know if I can answer that. I think that.
Okay. Thank you. We'll have our first speaker.
There you go.
Okay, Mr. Arnold.
Excuse me. I purposely turned in my slip later to let Rick Hawley go ahead. Could you let us do that?
Sure. Mr. Hawley, if you want to speak first.
No.
My name is Richard Hawley, and I'm a member of the Cambria Forest Committee, and also I'm an elected member of the San Luis Obispo Community Fire Safe Council. Although I'm not representing the Fire Safe Council or the CFC, I'm representing myself. One of the things that really is bothersome about this ordinance is that it was done in a 6-month time frame, but in a complete vacuum to the people who own the lots and the community, and the Cambria Forest Committee, who actually produced a forest management plan that addresses all of the issues that the chief brings up. And the forest management plan is nowhere included in this ordinance. And by the way, anyone who would like to read the ordinance, it's on the Green Space website. The people that my good friend, the Chief Putney, whom I've known since he's been in town, and I have a great deal of respect for him, but I have to question who he has brought in to the look at this and give us recommendations. I'm really perturbed that the chief has gone out of the area and not consulted even the forest committee, which he chairs, and had plenty of opportunity to let us know that this was happening. We may have given him some great input and avoided all this. I think CEQA issues, when you remove the amount of vegetation that the chief is recommending your board to remove in this forest, it's going to destroy this forest. And it's not that I'm not for forest fire protection and forest protection. I put on classes how to do defensible space. Green Space has put out many pamphlets on training issues and teaching people what invasive plants are and how to provide defensible space around their home. But for instance, the ordinance says limbing trees that are 7 feet or more up 6 feet. If you have a 5-foot tree, that means there's no limbs on it. You cut all the limbs off. I mean, so there's some definition problems here. I think that Health and Safety Code 1490.6 needs to be looked at a little more closely, because it does require that the CCSD do some explicit and rigid requirements in notifying people of what they should do to their property and how they should treat their property. And this ordinance blows right across that. There's a lot of issues that I've also given to Mr. Montandon and the chief through the Forest Advisory Council that you now have. So I would urge the chief, this esteemed body, to talk to the citizens and get their feel on it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Hawley. Mr. Arnold?
Before the next speaker comes up, Mr. President, I think it's grossly unfair to take Chief Putney to the woodshed over this. The buck stops here, not with him. He's doing the job that he was hired to do as he sees the best and most appropriate way to do it. There's a props with the board, not with Chief Putney.
That's Greg Sanders' opinion, and I respect it as well. What did Voltaire say? Was it Voltaire? Who was it that said that I may disagree with my fellow citizen, but I'll fight to the death his right to say it?
Words to that effect.
Right. We ought to remember that when people come up and disagree. Okay, Mr. Arnold.
Thank you, Chairman and members of the board. My name is Jesse Arnold. June of this year, it'll be 40 years since I came here. So I'm speaking from some experience.
And you're still
here.
Looking good. How do you do that?
we'll talk about that later.
It's those
thank
funny
you.
Hats that you wear.
Thank you, thank you. Thank you for not taking action on this item today. And I did want Rick Hawley to go first so I could say I support his remarks. I'm also concerned that we preserve what is left of our forest, and I believe we can do that and still have fire safety. I'm also here to ask your board to leave the deadline for clearing at July 1st. And I can see from your papers that you're concerned about getting uncleared lots on the tax rolls. But I think you, the buck stops with you, are going to have to put the money up to pay for this and not depend on an early deadline. And the reason I say that is I'm supporting the workers. We have local people who do difficult and dangerous work to see that this clearing is done. And they're very capable, and they're knowledgeable, they're skilled, they know what to cut and what not to cut. And to ask them to do a whole lot more work and the deadline is 3 weeks earlier is not fair to them, and it's not realistic. And I would ask you to keep the deadline at July 1st. And as I say, if the people of this community want this work done, they should be willing to pay for it. And you're the people who are going to have to shoulder that responsibility. Also, it's on the board to be sure that the chief backs up his allegations with facts and figures. I'll give you an example. He says in his report, Cambria has long been identified as a community at significant wildland fire risk. Well, I've been here living in the fog in the pines for 40 years, and I haven't seen a significant fire. The only significant fire we had was the Great Fire of 1889. It wasn't a forest fire. It was a structure fire. Sure, there have been spot fires around, but there hasn't, to my knowledge, been even a moderate fire. So what's his authority for saying it's long been identified? Then this one, it has been predicted and clearly described that it is a matter of when Cambria will suffer a large-scale devastating wildland fire, and we can, I hope, preserve what's left of the forest. And please ask the chief to back up any allegations he makes with facts and figures. Thank you.
Excellent timing, Jesse. Joellen Butler.
Sometime you should do this in reverse alphabetical order. Mr. President and Board of Directors, thank you for...
I just can't get away from women giving me advice.
There's something about you. Thank you for letting me talk about this ordinance. I think the ordinance idea is a very good one, and I agree with the staff report suggesting that the ordinance should be given more time and more public input. I think that's necessary for consensus building and to make the whole community more comfortable with the ordinance when it is passed. Although the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve is covered under a fire plan written for the management plan by Chief Putney, that's Exhibit G, I think the language in both this ordinance and the management plan can be improved. I have concerns about how this would affect the forest on the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve, and that's one of my main concerns. Between the ordinance and Exhibit G, FFRP is uncertain as to how the ordinance would affect the ranch. It seems severe in terms of limbing and duff removal. We also have concerns about mowing in the wetland area behind Wedgwood. At this point, we believe that it might have an adverse effect on the forest and its inhabitants, but we don't know for sure. We need to look at how it might affect the health of our endangered forest and consider that along with the ordinance for fire safety. We understand that a fire could also be very detrimental to the forest, and so we're also looking at that aspect of this ordinance. Chief Putney has offered to do a walk on the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve with our board and to explain his concerns to us, and we appreciate the offer and we'll schedule a walk with him, and I think that will help allay our concerns or focus more on what we need to talk about.
Sure, when he does the walking, he doesn't wear that skirt kilt thing, but okay.
Urge that you adopt Resolution 7C today and let this go for a while longer until it's resolved. Thank you.
Thank you, Joellen. Jeff Miller.
Good afternoon, and thank you for listening to my comments. And I want to piggyback right away on what Joellen said, with this doesn't need to be a safety versus environment issue. I'm fairly new to Cambria, about 3.5 years, a transplant from Southern California. See the rural San Fernando Valley when I moved there in 1960, some of the wildfires, the big Bel Air fire where they let it burn down to the freeway because that was going to let the fire stop, and it jumped the freeway and burned the other side of 405. The Malibu fire that burned right past my house all the way down to the beach. And in Carlsbad, the large Harmony Grove fire. I agree with Chief Putney that not if we have a fire here, it's when we have a fire. Something he beats us up pretty good about in our CERT meetings. I want to tell you a little interesting story that happened to me when I first moved here. Moved here 2003. About 6 months after I moved here, I have been an auto club member for years, having my renter's insurance and my auto insurance with the auto club. About 6 months after we moved here, I received a letter from the auto club stating, "We have noticed you have moved to Cambria and your renter's insurance is canceled." And I subsequently called them up. "Why is my insurance canceled?" They said, "We will not insure anyone in Cambria." That was a big issue with me. Luckily, my parents had added me to their auto club policy when I was 16. I am fortunate enough to have piggybacked on that, where my auto club card says I've been a driver for 43 years. So I'm 50, so I haven't been driving for 43 years. But that meant enough that I could go down to the auto club in San Luis, talk to the manager, have them hire a photographer to come out to my house that I rent in Cambria, make sure they got a picture of the fire hydrant on the corner in the picture, and for him to go to his supervisors for me to get a special exemption that they would continue my renter's insurance. So I think the defensible space is an issue here, and I would definitely support the chief's expertise and what the staff comes up with.
First, I have witnessed the work of both the Cambria Fire Department and our local CDF crews. There have been numerous fires within this forest, and these departments have done an excellent job at suppression and control. As an example, the recent fire in Strawberry Canyon occurred very close to my home. We spotted it very soon. We called in the planes. Chief Putney was there. And very fast, they put out a crown fire in our forest. Early detection by our neighbors and immediate action was what saved it. As with all the fires in our forest, rapid response due to early detection has prevented a larger fire. I urge you to consider the consequences of this ordinance you're proposing. Removal of biological diversity within the forest, huge financial burden to the individual lot owners for annual lot clearance, mismanagement of an already stressed out forest environment that surrounds us. I urge you to direct your fire prevention actions to promote an early detection method and to support all the efforts to provide quick response and suppression, not destruction of our forest. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moss. Joyce Renshaw.
Joyce Renshaw, I lived here for 10 years, and I feel very torn between two camps here. I happen to be vice chair of the Fire Focus Committee, and I'm also on the board of directors of Friends of Esquilini Ranch Preserve. So that puts me kind of in the middle of things as far as this ordinance goes. I really am worried about fire in Cambria. We have been since we moved here. I do think we need to have defensible space. Maybe it can be done in a kinder manner in the forest itself. I'm not sure. I'm just as I said, I'm torn between the two. Anyway, I would like you to support what the chief has proposed, and maybe with some additions to the forest area when he takes a walk with us on the Esquilini Ranch, maybe we can twist his arm a hair. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Renshaw. Mr. Renshaw?
Yes, Ken Renshaw from Cambria. Also, I've lived here for 10 years. Good afternoon. My name is Wayne Ryburn. As you know from the last meeting, you know that I support Chief Putney and his effort to have an ordinance. It's obvious from the input and his discussion that we need more players. We need a broad input. But I don't want to come back next year at this time and have the same argument. I hope if you do this, you'll have a well-defined timeline for more input and updating the ordinance and bring it back here in a reasonable period of time. So for our next season, you'll have something in place. I support including the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve, especially the perimeter of that reserve as it affects houses that are structured around it. I mean, I realize that's an issue. And I wonder if this is going to cause the need for more staff or oversight in the future. Maybe that's something you should look at. In other words, if you put an ordinance in, it's very comprehensive, it's very broad, it takes, what, years, I'm sure, to get caught up for all the time that these lots haven't been cleared. Is the chief going to need more staff? That would be a logical question for me. Someone in charge of that, perhaps. And then I had a recent conversation that was kind of interesting with PG&E. They are in the community now taking out dead trees, I guess because it cost them so much last time when all the trees fell. And the field representative made a remark to me, gee, I wish we had a mapping system so we knew where all these lots and trees were. And I said, well, do you know that the service district has a GPS system? They were completely unaware of this. So I referred him to Tammy. I don't know whether he ever showed up, and I didn't bring the name with me. I'm sorry. I could call it into you. But it just points out the need for maybe here's another player that could not only advise you but could save you money using their budget to take out dead trees in certain areas. So a good cause. Please move on with it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ryburn. And finally, of course, Jerry McKinnon has a couple of opinions on this issue.
Thank you. Jerry McKinnon again. I'm looking at the cover page, the first page, fiscal impact. It talks about raising the money to clear the lots by property taxes assessed against those owners who do not clear their own lots. My question is, how is that?
Thank you, Mr. McKinnon, and that ends our public comment period. I'll entertain a motion. I'll entertain a motion.
I wonder, perhaps we could answer Jerry McKinnon's request because we have a standard policy.
We're going to take a recess.
I did pass in a slip, and I have to go because I have an appointment.
Come back at 3 o'clock.
May I please?
Please. Right. Yeah, it is a little cold, isn't it? Yeah. Maybe it's appropriate to say a couple of things about what happened before the recess. And I'll begin with a couple of personal observations. When I first came on this board, the CCSD meetings were often filled with a lot of vitriol. There was a lot of nasty comments made in the public, tension, and the community was divided on several issues. And perhaps the closest illustration I can give to those folks who weren't here at that time was something like the Los Osos community, where the community has been divided over the sewer issue. But over the years, I think we've done a remarkable job in becoming a sort of model CCSD in the community, and a good amount of credit goes to the community primarily, because we've adopted rules that encourage, I think, civility and decorum, because in our system of government, that's the only it helps manage the meetings more effectively. It helps the speakers focus on what they want to speak about. There's multiple reasons, and I think many agencies follow that practice. Today, we had two people who decided for whatever reason that that practice was not acceptable to them. I try to be tolerant and patient with one, and I made an exception to our general practice that we've been following now for at least, I think, 5-6 years. But that person refused to comply, even though everybody else did and has for literally 5 years. I don't like to stop meetings unnecessarily. I like to move meetings along, but we can't have these kinds of disturbances. Everybody suffers, and it's just wrong. So that's why I cut off the meeting. And then there was another lady who I've known for many years, and she also just gets up there to the speaker stand, again, inconsistent with the way we've done business. We can't have this continue. I can assure anyone who's listening to this that if we welcome public comments, this issue in particular, I think, shows how responsive we've been. Last month, we were moving on this in kind of an urgency mode. But since that time, the community has spoken up the way it's always done. And I think the public can see how we've responded, including the people who are responsible for putting this on the urgency mode in the first place, namely the chief. And we're always responsive, and that's a fact. So, again, please, if you have anything to say, we want to listen to you. We will, and that's a promise, that's a guarantee, we will consider what you have to say, but please do it in a way that's fair to everybody. And to quote Tevye, tradition. It's tradition. So it's a good thing. Let's follow it. Okay, that's enough of the editorial comment. Now, where were we?
If you were finished with public comment, staff recommends that you...
After I just spoke from my heart... Do you want to speak to us, Mr. Allen?
I have not filled out a speaker slip. I would like permission to make a one-sentence comment regarding your comments just now. When I first came to Cambria many years ago, I remember the owner of the lumber yard here showed up at the CCSD meetings with a six-shooter on his hip, and he let everybody know that he meant business with that. Thank you.
Okay, so where were we again?
Mr. President, just to move this along, this is a very important matter. In fact, in the scheme of things, it's right up there with water storage and the other fire safety issues that the board has been addressing for the past several years. At the February meeting, the board, on its own initiative, took cognizance of the lack of consistency between the proposed ordinance and the forest management plan. This is not something that just suddenly germinated in the community. The board itself referred this to the staff for the purpose of coming back with an ordinance that reflects those aspects of the forest management plan that are germane to lot clearance. I think the best comment that I heard, and it came from several people in various iterations, the best comment is we can have both. We don't need to sacrifice forest ecology for fire safety, and we don't necessarily need to sacrifice fire safety for forest ecology. My concern is that if we don't put some very tight time parameters on this that the comment of Wayne Ryburn will come to pass, and that is we'll be debating this a year from now. So what I propose is that we refer this back to the fire chief and instruct the fire chief to reading if we're satisfied with it. If we're not satisfied with it, then we'll have to elongate the process.
It would be applicable next fire season.
I would support that. Before we would close it off with that, I would very much like Chief to have an opportunity to tell us how risk is determined. The criticism that was weighed against him is not because we've never had a fire, we're hardly at high risk. To have a chance to say that, is that appropriate, Bob?
Well, I'm not sure how to answer your question. I'm not sure what the question is.
Well, one of the speakers said that your definition of high risk was off the wall and had no data to back it up. And I assume you do have a reason to say that we're at high risk, that Cambria is at high risk.
Yeah, that comment that specifically in my staff report came out of the San Luis Obispo County General Safety Element, and it also came out of, let me look at my notes here because I wrote down questions when they brought them back. From the CDF CAL FIRE fire management plan that was submitted to the Board of Supervisors in 2000 and was approved and was accepted by them. Those statements are in there. That's where I got those. Not off the wall.
Yeah, Mr. President, with all due respect to the speaker who took issue with the fire chief over the imminent fire danger in the community, I really think we'd be irresponsible if we didn't plan for a very catastrophic fire in Cambria. I have a very good friend, a very close friend, who lost his house in the Oakland Hills fire, and I recall him telling me that kind of the mantra among the residents in the Oakland Hills was, well, it can never happen here. They have roughly the same weather conditions and the same kind of fauna that we have here in Cambria. So it can happen here, and if we assume that it won't happen here, I think we're just asking for a real disaster.
Well, this is I agree with everything that is been said on this side of the table, but I don't think I heard any of the speakers take a contrary position. I think that part of the problem here is that Cambrians like to be involved, and the problem is that this worked out or tweaked before the next fire season. So and at the same time, it puts us on some sort of a timetable. So,
Mr. President, I'm really concerned about this fire season because, as our utilities manager says, rainfall is down. Obviously, water supplies are low this year. So we're walking right into the perfect storm. And I'm just wondering if anything we do could be applied to this fire season. That's really what I'm concerned about. I assume that in 90 days, it's too late to do anything for this year. And this year is what I'm worried about. And well, I just don't feel like rolling over because of political pressure and saying, well, let's take care of it tomorrow.
No, this is not a question of political pressure, yeah, because if we were to pass this ordinance as presently drafted, it is, according to my discussion with district council, it would be illegal.
Well,
it has not been cleared through CEQA. There's some legitimate legal issues. So it's not a question of rolling over.
Okay.
It's a question of doing the wise legal thing. That's why I like what Mr. Sanders is proposing, because it puts us on a track,
right,
and it puts us on a, I think, a fairly good track, because there's two groups that definitely want to be involved in vetting this ordinance. One is the Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve, and the other one is the Cambria Forest Committee. And by the way, the Cambria Forest Committee has as a member Art Trinidad, who happens to be the county's top planning enforcement official. And he also wants input. And he's at the meeting, which was a 2-hour meeting that Tammy and Art and Chief Putney and I attended. It was a lively meeting. It was a, and there needs to be stuff that needs to be done, and I think we all are in the same wavelength. So we're not going to lose. We still have the same fire department. We still have the same personnel. We still have great fire chief and great firefighters. Just the law has to be tweaked a little bit.
Okay.
Well, but the thing that we haven't hasn't been mentioned at all is the fact that we're out of water is an issue this summer. One, for the lack of rainfall. Secondly, with the tanks being in their transition phase. So we can't deal with that lightly, that there just plain isn't enough water for any kind of catastrophe. The second thing is the CEQA thing hasn't been mentioned before. It wasn't in the staff report, and I don't know. Yeah. That's new to us.
The season.
Mr. President, I move that we refer the ordinance under consideration back to the fire chief for the purpose of soliciting community input, particularly as this ordinance relates to the forest management plan, and that the chief report back to the board with a revised ordinance at the meeting that is closest to 90 days from now.
Second.
I support it. Just as though I think I'd rather put it in the lap of the general manager to get it back to
us. I was going
to
ask for staff rather than just the fire chief, because Art and I are working with him on that.
That's fine.
Okay, with that...
I second it.
Okay, with that modification, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 None against. Passes unanimously. Let's go on to 7C.
Okay, item 7C is the backup action. This is to adopt Resolution 25-2007, declaring a public nuisance within the Cambria Community Services District for the 2007 Fire Hazard Fuel Reduction Defensible Space Program. And I will turn it over to Fire Chief Bob Putney.
This agenda item is before you in the based on the direction we received last month, where it did not appear that the Defensible Space Ordinance was going to go through. About 6,180 vacant parcels in the Community Services District. We inspect notice for compliance. If they do not meet the deadline for clearing, then we hire a district contractor, which is at a competitive process, and you approve as the Board of Directors that contractor who gets it. Who gets the contract, and those parcels that aren't cleared by the deadline go to contract, and we bill them for the tax dollars to reimburse what we've paid out to clear the lots. The difference this year is, over the last several years, the County of San Luis Obispo, specifically the tax collector, has taken serious odds, and I was directed by the general manager after several meetings with the county that we could no longer submit at the end of August those parcels charges that had gone to contract, because they had to have them in beforehand to prepare the tax bills. So this year, the change basically will be is that June 10th instead of July will be the deadline for parcels to meet clearance. The contract would begin, a tenant owner said, I didn't even own the parcel, and then it becomes involved in litigation. So there's no good, clear way to do this better than what we currently are. We're kind of at the mercy of the tax collector, and this is what Los Osos, Pismo Beach, City of San Luis, that's what all the other communities are basically doing. I realize our wildland fuels dry out later, but we're somewhat at the mercy if we're going to spend $100,000 and ask to get it back from taxpayers who are delinquent in clearing their lots or never clear them. If we're going to get it back in the same year and not be out the money, we're going to have to do it in the same year the work was done. So this declaration basically is would continue the program that we had last year. I heard very clearly what the discussion you had before about you want to continue moving forward, and we intend to do that as well and continue increasing the number of lots that are cleared to improve the defensible space in the community.
Any comments?
Can we move the recommended action?
Except that there's someone from the public who wants to speak on this.
All right.
I'd also like to thank the chief, because the number of lots has gone up steadily each year, and so it's a sizable amount of the time. And I appreciate the hard work there. Thank you.
Mr. McGarry?
Good
Good afternoon, Mr. President, Madam, gentlemen. My name is John McGarry, and I live here in Cambria, and I would ask that you adopt this resolution. I'm with the Fire Focus Group. My comments probably would have been more germane to the last agenda item relative to the ordinance, which I support in total because of the significant fire risk that we live under in this remarkable Monterey Pine Forest. As I say, I wish that you would endorse this resolution, and also I want to go on record as saying that we really do need a strong, enforceable ordinance to address this issue, which my wife and I haven't been in the community that long, but I understand this is a long simmering issue, and given the fire risk that we live under, I think it needs to be addressed, and I think we're going in the right direction. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. McGarry. That's it for the public comments. I'll entertain a motion.
I move the recommended action.
All those in favor, please state aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously.
Mr. President?
Yes.
I did have one other thing, and I'm sorry I didn't mention that here earlier. There will be another change to the program this year. It's important that you hear it from me. It will go out in the notices, but a lot, which has always been a problem, people illegally dump it on other people's property, and then when you go to clear your lot, you find somebody stacked wood underneath your vegetation, and you have to haul it away. So this year, we're not going to allow people to stack firewood on there other than for the purpose of getting it out of there before the deadline. So we won't allow stack firewood anymore, and again, that's to defer to the county. They brought up some legal issues, and we feel we must comply.
Thank you. 8A, Tammy.
Okay, 8A is to adopt Resolution 21-2007 declaring April as Water Conservation Month. We have done these in the past via proclamations, but we have worked together as a staff and decided that some of these and historical records show up as resolutions, so we want to continue that practice so that there is this documentation trail. Despite very little rain during the past season, the district well levels are stable. However, Cambria is under a water moratorium, and we have been so since 2001, making water conservation a necessity. I'd like to take the opportunity to thank all of us who live here who do make this a priority in our lives. It is very interesting, the folks that I've gotten to talk to over the past several months with regard to the build-out reduction program and or, time up, I'm done, and the yeah. special project.
Please wind up your presentation.
And I didn't fill out a speaker slip. And special project area two, with regard to the top of the world ordinance. And folks, even who don't live here, are still very knowledgeable about water use and water programming, and those who are looking forward to joining our community. So it's not often maybe that the community gets complimented, maybe, and from our staff, they're always willing to compliment us on occasion. So I'd like to take this opportunity to publicly do that on behalf of the staff here at CCSD and you all as a board of directors. In that vein, we have the resolution attached, but I would like to take the opportunity before you do adopt the resolution to read the water conservation rules and the water saving tips. They're very brief. Let the public know these are available on the CCSD website. Under our water code, Title 4, Chapter 4.08, the water conservation rules that apply here to Cambria residents and businesses at all times are that you do not allow water to run off onto other properties or the street. Unattended watering or irrigation of landscaping is prohibited. Do not irrigate landscape between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. Irrigation should only provide sufficient water to maintain minimal landscaping needs. Do not wash down sidewalks, driveways, parking lots, etc. Use a broom. Repair leaks in plumbing or your water distribution system within 8 hours of discovery. I even think that needs to be tightened up a bit, but that's because I have a utilities background or construction activities. This is another one that commonly comes into the office, and I have to say that it's typically our neighbors who report us. If somebody is using or has a contractor at their home, they will call us, and we go out and remind people that you cannot use potable water for construction activities. Under our water saving tips, limit your showers to 5 minutes. Install a 2.0 gallon per minute shower head. Install water efficient fixtures. For example, replace the 3.5 or 5 gallon toilets with a 1.6 gallon per flush toilet. Run only full loads in your washing machine and your dishwasher. Don't leave the water running while shaving or brushing your teeth. Use drought tolerant plants. Adjust the watering schedule seasonally and with changes in the weather. Use drip or micro irrigation systems. Periodically check your sprinkler system to ensure it's operating properly. And there are frequent power outages here in Cambria that can wreak havoc with timers This is probably one of the largest things that we get in the customer service department at CCSD, folks who may not necessarily live here or they have property management companies that they're not aware sometimes that their sprinkler systems fail. And so we just try to be mindful that, you know, there is a shutoff, obviously, on their systems if they're not going to be in town, that they could actually cut the thing off. And then replace lawns with ground covers requiring minimal water. And that's all. The resolution 21-2007 is recommended for adoption.
Could I ask a question? Are we still giving out the cards to motels or restaurants about water usage?
That's what Corey does, Corey Ryan, when she goes out, and when we acknowledge that they need just a reminder. We have little tents that can sit actually on the tables at the restaurants, and we have supplies for any restaurant owner or proprietor that would like to contact us to get those.
And the other thing to remind folks is if you're going to be away from home is to turn the water off. And
I do.
Yep. I do as well.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to not comment, but actually recommend adopt resolution 21-2007 declaring April as Water Conservation Month. Just to move things along.
Okay.
Under discussion... since it's been moved and seconded, I have a question of the council. Do we have the authority to require that motel, vacation rental, bed and breakfast operators include signs in the rooms that water conservation is mandatory?
I believe so. I'm not sure if we don't have that in the ordinance today. I'd have to look.
I don't know when they were authored or how they were authored. They may have actually preceded me. Do either of you know that? Ben, you do? Would you come to the podium? Thank you.
Ben Bohr, CCSD staff. The generation of the water saving tips came from what we called the BMPs, Best Management Practices for All Urban Water Users. There's a set of guidelines that we borrowed out of there.
And is that a statewide?
It's a statewide agency.
Okay. Thank you.
Welcome.
That's what I thought. And the reason why I thank you for that clarification, I may be demonstrating my bias, but I think that there's a percentage of people in this community who have grown up with lawns, and they think that lawns are a good thing. That's where kids play, and that's where you play croquet and drink your martinis at the end of a hard day and read the Saturday Evening Post and Reader's Digest. And but I don't think lawns, frankly, are consistent with a Cambria lifestyle. I know it's going to offend some people, but we live in a forest, and lawns don't belong in a forest. And when you look at all these water conservation rules and water saving tips, there's an implication that somehow you haven't reached the American nirvana unless you have a home with a lawn. And that does not apply, in my opinion, in Cambridge. So the last bullet point I have a real problem with. And when Ben told me this is a statewide publication, that last bullet point implies that people should have lawns. And I think that we should encourage people, maybe through education, that I can guarantee nowhere in the Cambria Forest Management Plan is there provisions for lawns. Lawns drain water. I think that the chief probably likes it because it's probably easy to fight fires on a lawn. But in terms of water conservation, it's not a good thing. And I wish if we can have an extra bullet point to encourage people that you can still have a beautiful home and beautiful landscaping, and you can still enjoy it.
Yeah, so there's a force of law there. I'm not sure.
Just a thought, but I'm ready to take a vote. Yeah, but when they say replace lawns, there's an implication that somehow lawns are, if you can't do it, okay, no hard feelings. But I think there has to be part of our responsibilities to educate the public, and because listen, when we came up here and we installed the lawn, and we thought that was the coolest thing to watch our kids play in the lawn. And then you start living in this town and you realize, God, what are we doing? And we felt like idiots, frankly, and we got rid of it. But that's us, and we see more and more people. But I still see a bunch of people, especially newcomers, and they mean well. I mean, it's not, you know, they're insensitive. They just, it's not consistent with their background. It's not something that they understand until they live a while and they learn how unique our area is. Anyway. Well,
they could substitute, you know, AstroTurf.
Yeah. There's some other suggestions. Okay, all those in favor, please state aye.
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 Hearing none against, the motion passes unanimously. 8C.
Okay, 8C is to adopt Resolution 23-2007 approving the updated existing commitments list per CCSD Code Chapter 8.04, Section 8.04.030 to reflect updated status. This is Art in my report, even though his name got lopped off, but it looks like he must have a comment.
Well, we had discussed this, and after some thought, since I am on this list, I'd like to declare a conflict and step out of the room.
I apologize. He does need to step out. Staff brings you this list annually or as needed when it needs to be updated, and we did a really good thorough review, Corey and myself and several others, with regard to what the existing commitments list looks like. It's actually an attachment or Exhibit B to that chapter that I just read off, the chapter 8.04, section 30. This action you take today, of course, has no fiscal impact. What I tried to do in the staff report and the attachments, in the staff report I summarized the attachments. If you'll see the one that you have attached that has the yellow, this is the one you approved last year. And the highlights are the things we're changing. So what I like to do is present to you what you had before, what the changes were, struck through in this format and color so they're easy to follow. And then the one behind that is the way it's going list. That's not the categories that were on there. You know, they had unimproved, they had unbuilt, they, you know, it didn't meet the ordinance the way the ordinance specified it should meet. So we tried to do that in the new list. So you'll see that the categories say, you know, the unimproved single-family residential. You'll see the commercial. You'll see the Cambria West tract that's separate just because it is by agreement, and it is easier to follow to keep that one separate. And then you'll see, too, the parks, landscape, irrigation service commitments because that's in another section of the ordinance. So on this new list, two of them were removed from the list because they became active services. So they're no longer an existing commitment because they're an active service and they're now an active billing customer. Five of the projects, and I tried to do it for reference points for you all by assessor's parcel number, have been removed because they're accounted for in Exhibit D, and I can specifically tell you which ones those are. They're the ones on the old list, the former one, in highlighted yellow that are unbuilt active service meters. Because what occurred is these are folks who either transfer active services or they tear down a house. And so they're really not existing commitments because they're active services. Their status never changes. They continue to be active services. They just may have moved it or they're in the process of constructing a new property. So in my mind, I did not think they belonged on this list. It made it look like we were adding to the list. And from what I understand from previous staff members, they felt they needed a place for it to go so that they could be monitored and tracked, and so they stuck them on this list. And I just don't think reading literally the ordinance, this is the appropriate place. So we actually removed them. They're on our Exhibit D. Exhibit D to this code section is all of us who are active service customers, okay? And they are. They didn't change their status just because they've transferred their service or they have a teardown in process. One of the projects that was formerly listed as a single-family residential is being moved to commercial due to the fact that only the commercial EDUs remain from that project. And you'll see that one highlighted in yellow. I do have Corey Ryan here, a staff member that helped me with this, so she may have to come up and assist me with exactly where it went. But you'll see it's up in the first section on the old list. You'll see it as number 3, the Schoolhouse Lane, the vacant water and sewer, and there's 0.72 commercial. You see we were blending commercial with residential, so now we're clarifying it on the new list and making sure that 0.72 goes down into the commercial section. three projects were moved to the single-family residential section from the settlement or the negotiated agreement section that was eliminated because there's no such action we took in May 2005. And those items are number 13. No, I'm sorry, number 14, the Michael Clark agreement. Or is that the Brad Clark agreement? That's the Michael Clark, Brad Clark. I'm sorry, thank you. And then finally, we have the Seven Park landscape irrigation commitments. As you recall, in the last time you looked at this in 2005, we had this discussion, take them off. They're not existing commitments. But unfortunately, your code section 8.04.030A3 says you need to be putting them in here specifically. It addresses these. And it just says that they need to be listed. They're out there. They're active services. So certainly we can take it under advisement if you'd like for us to look at maybe altering that language, because they are active services similar to the ones like a teardown or a transfer. But you'll see them on the new list, and they're in green on the second page. So we just added the section because the ordinance provides that we would do that and that they're tracked, and they're in green on that back page. And you'll see they're not currently on the list that you approved in 2005. The only other addition, just for reference points and for tracking, is we added the CCSD billing account numbers. You had them last year, but we continued that process. It is really good as a check system that you not only have the APN or the assessor's parcel number that a commitment is attached, but you also have the CCSD billing account number. The reason I bring this up is because during this past year, staff has worked hard to get the accounts in compliance because they call for these folks to have to be paying minimum billing. And so now you see that they have been accomplished and they do actually have a CCSD account number.
So to clarify, each one on this list are currently paying a minimum
bill. They're current customers. Okay. Yeah. And they pay minimum billing.
And they
typically
pay the whatever the ordinance passed earlier for availability and everything.
Yes. Okay. And that's all as far as summarizing the differences in what you are being asked to consider and approve today. Again, what you are asked to approve is the second list, and it's with the changes that are in your first list or your prior list that you approved in 2005.
Any discussion?
Yes, Mr. President. With regard to the landscape, irrigation, et cetera, active service list, which I think is numbers 45 through 51. There's seven of them. To eliminate these.
Which numbers?
It's the last part of the list, 45 through 51.
And these are established accounts. These are not folks that are out there waiting to get these, and no other ones have been honored since these. These are the only ones that are out there that we're aware of.
These are active service meters.
They're irrigation active service accounts.
And you're not going to issue any more?
We haven't. These are the only ones that we have in the community, so they've been well established here.
So how old is the most recent?
I do not know the answer to that question.
The origin of these seems to be shrouded in deep mystery.
They have a regular meter as well, in addition to the irrigation meter?
No, there's no difference in the meters. There's just their use and the way they were permitted many, many years ago. Okay, so they've been long established. I think it's a good question to go back and see when the last one was. I just know about one of the accounts, particularly Andy's Garden. I mean, it was an old permit that they had when they put it in.
There's no house associated with it. It's just a garden.
Are they
all that way?
No.
Well,
yes.
I got a problem. We're going to talk about Andy's Garden because that's right across the street from where I live.
No. Several of them, and we have, based on the list, this was discussed in 2005, there are a couple of them that they are under review. They do not have what we would consider to be single-family residences attached to them. And their primary purpose is for the irrigation of a park, for example, this one. But there have just been other things that have been added on. So we definitely need to address that, and we are. Staff is working on those. But these other ones we have verified are just being used for either ag or irrigation.
For example.
I just need to make sure that I'm not breaching any kind of regulation here. I'm right across, in district council, he's not here, so I can't even ask him. But Andy's Garden is across the street from my house. So, I mean, are we going to take any action that's going to involve other than updating the list that as staff has recommended?
That's not what staff's recommending. We're just recommending the approval of the list.
I'm going to propose that we do.
Okay. All right. But yeah, because if there's any discussion about Annie's Garden, I can't. I mean, obviously, I have a conflict.
It's significant that it says that there's no EDUs assigned, so no one can take one of these and invent a house to put on. It says there, so that's good.
I just want to disclose.
Yeah, sure.
Brick has to eliminate them.
Well, maybe list what. Well, we know one now, what it does.
Well, we just need more time than 30 days, unfortunately.
Yeah. All right, 60 days.
Yeah.
I'm not going to participate out of an abundance of caution.
So tell us what they're all used for, you know, what that's.
Well, I, with all due respect, I think that's part of the report back to us.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And this will be an item that district council can assist on, this particular section. Okay. I don't believe that substitute motion was seconded. I'm just letting you know.
My motion stands.
Let's do an individual on this one.
And may I clarify, Director, did you withdraw your motion, Peter, the original motion?
Yes.
Okay. Roll call vote with... Director Sanders?
Aye.
Director Copen?
Aye.
Director Chaldicott?
Aye.
Director Villeneuve?
Aye.
And President Funky Blue recused himself.
Right. Okay, now it's time for a public comment. We have two speakers, Susie Ficker. Oh, that's too bad. Okay. And Steve Cole.
Hello, Steve Cole, Cambria. This is regarding a property, I believe it's owned by CCSD. It's in the east ranch, the east section of it, next to a house. It's a structure that was apparently a cattle enclosure with a chute. Are you familiar with that, I hope? In any case, it's unless it's been taken out in the last couple of weeks, it's still there. And I'd like to see it remain as part of, it's part of our history. And I think it's rather unique. And I think it'd be appropriate. And my question to you people is what you intend to do with it.
I have no idea what structure he's talking about. Does anybody know?
Are you talking about the Phillips Ranch on the East Ranch? You know, we haven't made any plans yet, obviously, and so staff can bring back a response at a later time.